2.
Ridiculous, said Abaddon, dropping the data slate to the gleaming obsidian table. That's what they want you to think.
They gathered in one of the sepulchral audience chambers of the Mausolytic, a place where the citizens of Dwell could meet and commune with their ancestors. Octagonal, with semicircular alcoves spaced at regular intervals around the wall, the gloomy and somber chamber had been appropriated by the Mournaval for their newly instigated meetings. At Mar's request, they gathered to hear his suspicions of the growing threat of Shadrach Medjuson. Axeman sat before a glowing hololith, the light throwing the bruises on his cheek and swollen eye into sharp relief. Their sparring in the villa had been a brutal, punishing affair, of which Mar had taken the honours. Cathartic, and not a little liberating, Axemand had been proven correct in that it had balanced Mar's humours. Little Horus studied an entoptic rendering of interlinked icons. Each one was the location of an attack on their or their allies' forces, with a spreading chain of outcomes linking to other attacks and their consequences. It looked so much like a web, Mar half expected to see the image of a glowing spider at its centre. Or an iron fist.
It's entirely the opposite, said Axemand. If Tybalt's right, then they want us to dismiss them, to view them as a negligible threat until it's too late.
Grell Noctua had a spread of data slates fanned out before him, scrolling through multiple informational cascades at once.
Or Ezekiel's right, and it's all just beating the brush to make noise, to make us think there's a huge force out there working to some unseen plan and forcing the War Master to divert resources to fight them.
Of all the Mournaval, Noctua had thus far asked the most penetrating questions. Aspects Mar himself had not considered, counterpositions and advocatus diaboli refutations that made him feel like he had entered a court-martial with nothing more than circumstantial evidence and hearsay to prove his case. Abaddon paced the floor, his boundless energies keeping him from sitting in one place for any length of time. Kyber sat opposite Axemand, restraining himself from pacing as Abaddon did with visible effort.
If this were true, said Falcus Kyber, speaking slowly and tapping the nearest data slate, don't you think Horus Lupercal would have seen it?
Elevation to the Mournaval was evidently suiting Kyber.
Much to Mar's surprise, it was allowing a maturity he hadn't suspected the Widowmaker was capable of attaining to bloom. He'd asked the one and only question that had given Mar second thoughts about presenting his findings at all. Mar hesitated, knowing he was taking a risk in suggesting any lack on the part of the War Master.
Lupercal's gaze is fixed upon Terra, he said. It keeps him from seeing what is behind us.
Abaddon stopped his pacing.
And you said he didn't have the stomach for this, said Axemand with a chuckle.
The first captain switched his thunderous gaze between Mar and Axemand.
Another one who thinks he knows war better than the War Master, he said with a shake of the head. There's nothing here, Mar. Just a lot of smoke with no fire. You were on his fan. You know what we did there. Do you really think Lupercal would have been so careless as to let enough warriors escape who might form any kind of credible threat?
Mar knew he was on dangerous ground here. To agree with Abaddon was to openly criticize their Primarch, and even Axemand would take a dim view of such open dissent. Speculation was dangerous here, so he stuck to facts. He leaned over the table and switched the hololith to display scrolling diagrams that looked like genealogical trees, but which were, in fact, Legion orders of battle. This is a full manifest of the enemy forces deployed at Isfahan, as it was divined at the opening of the assault, said Mar, splitting the hollow into three columns, silver, green, and black. Iron Hands, Salamanders, and Raven Guard. Watch. One by one, the icons representing enemy squads changed from pale blue to red, as Mar fed in casualty reports and recorded exterminations. Like the creeping cellular sickness Mar had once observed Apothecary Vadon studying in the bloodstream of an infected scout auxilia, it expanded and increased the speed of its attack.
Even though they are our enemies, it still chills the blood to see so much Legion strength lost, said Noctua.
Don't be foolish, said Abaddon. You don't grieve for the enemy when he dies. You give thanks it wasn't you.
Eventually, the display finished updating, leaving the estimated forces a ragged shadow of their former glory.
As best as can be estimated, through collated butcher's bills and recovered armor, this is as close to an accurate figure as I can ascribe to the number of warriors who likely escaped Istvan.
The red icons of destroyed legion formations faded out, and Mars swept the remaining icons together. They didn't fit together nearly as neatly as the original diagram, but then this wasn't an order of battle, just a representation of what had likely survived the massacre.
"Look at what's left. Look at what we can't account for," said Mar. "I'll wager it's more than you thought, yes? Perhaps 22,000 warriors all told, give or take a few thousand either side? That's not a force we can just ignore."
"So, more got off Istvan than we thought," said Abaddon. "It still doesn't prove Shadrach Medjuson's behind all these attacks, or that he has some overarching plan. He mustered some resistance here at Dwell, but we defeated him. You broke him at Arasak. If he is in command, then he's doing a pretty poor job of fighting us. These attacks, irritating as they might be, are meaningless in the larger scheme of things."
"Are they?" asked Mar, skidding a data slate over the tabletop towards Abaddon.
"Medjuson threatened to raise the storm against us, and that's just what he's done. Look at what these meaningless attacks achieved. An entire company of Sons of Horus diverted from the front lines of the war. Months spent securing Istvan's supply routes, increased security around captured systems, and, more crucially, the slowing of the march to Terra."
Abaddon slammed his fist down on the table, and cracks spread across its mirror-black surface, reaching out to each member of the Mournival.
"Enough! You think because Medjuson escaped you once before that he's everywhere now. You really expect us to take these guilty delusions of yours to Lupercal? No, Tybalt. Go back to your company and get them ready for war. Within the week we will leave Dwell for a greater prize."
"You won't take this to Lupercal?" asked Mar.
"No," said the first captain. "We will not."
"And the rest of you agree with this?"
Kyber nodded, as Mar knew he would. Noctua also nodded, but he had at least considered his decision. Axemand placed his palms on the table, but any hopes that little Horus would side with him were quickly dashed.
"I think there is some merit in this, Tybalt, but I have to agree with my Mournival brothers," he said. "If this threat is as dire as you believe, to divert the level of resources you'd need to deal with it would greatly weaken our thrust on Terra."
Mar nodded slowly and switched the hololith's display from the combined survivor lists to an image of the galactic spiral. Istvan shimmered with a faint nimbus of cerulean light, Terra with a pulsing yellow haze, a blister in need of lancing.
"Ask yourself this, Mournival,"
said Mar, pointing to the tenebrous gulfs of space between the blue and the gold. "Who knows how much time the remnants of these shattered legions have brought the Emperor and his warriors to fortify, regroup, and prepare? How much closer to Terra would we be now, if not for them?" He leaned forwards. "And I'll tell you another thing. If Medjuson is behind these attacks, then he has a plan. And things are only going to get worse." Kyson Cybele and Cyan Azadine were waiting for him in the pillared approach vestibule beyond the Morsolytic's inner chambers. He marched past them, helm held in the crook of one arm, his other hand gripping the hilt of his sword. He kept up the swift pace until they stood on the scorched granite steps of the Morsolytic, looking out over the Sea of Enna.
"Well, I'm guessing that didn't go well," said Cybele.
"No," said Mar, "it didn't."
"And there is no word yet from the Primarch?"
asked Azadine. "None."
"But I see you're still set on this course," said Cybele. "Without sanction or authority?"
Mar looked up into the burning sky and nodded.
"Now, more than ever," he said.
Sorties out toward Dwell's Mandeville Point were rare, and despite the name, such locations were very rarely fixed points in space. The term was equally applied to any point far enough away from the gravity well of a star to allow safe translation into the warp. In essence, any point on a notional sphere surrounding the star
could be the Mandeville Point, which made a mockery of any attempt to guard it. Local system pilots and astropaths, of course, knew points upon that sphere where the angles between the Imperial realm and real space intersected to a greater degree and allowed for a smoother warp translation. Occupying regions of space tens of thousands of kilometers wide, they were haunted voids, where sourceless voices muttered obscenities and ghosts lurked in the shadows. And such points could be guarded. Three Sons of Horus vessels followed a stately course towards Dwell's Corward jump point, known locally as the Azoth Gate. The two destroyers, the Helicanus and the Cashin, and the frigate, Lupercal Pursuivant, bristled with veins and spikes, mailed fists in the face of the void. The small flotilla had set out from Dwell 6 days ago, and were making good time through the asteroid belt spread between the seventh and eighth planets. Mar commanded from the bridge of Lupercal Pursuivant, keeping his vessels in close formation as they navigated between waypoints towards the Azoth Gate. The asteroids were the debris of the system's creation millions of years before, left to drift in a captured orbit around the sun. Hundreds of kilometers in diameter, each vast hunk of inert rock drifted through space like an aimless wanderer. Thousands of kilometers separated each asteroid from its nearest neighbor, making transit of the belt a relatively simple affair. Cosmic dust and micrometeor impacts ablated the hulls of all three vessels, fouling local AuSpec sectors with false returns and phantom images. If there were going to be an attack, this would be an ideal location from which to launch it. Despite that, the three shipmasters were making no attempt at stealth. A constant chatter of vox passed between each vessel and active surveyor sweeps, together with high-energy electromagnetic pulses, lashed the void before them. The AuSpec stations on every bridge revealed no trace of enemy presence. Not that Mar expected any. Not yet, at least. The first sign of trouble came when the engines of the Lupercal Pursuivant stuttered with occlusion flare. The venting systems of a starship's drive systems were necessarily extensive, given the volatile plasmas employed in their reactor cores. The fouling of venting systems with void-borne dust was something no captain could afford, carrying as it did the risk of explosive blowback into the reactor cores. When the Master of Engines sent word to the bridge of the Lupercal Pursuivant of ejection failures throughout the engineering decks, Mar immediately shut down the reactors. A flurry of urgent vox passed between the three shipmasters, as the best course of action was deliberated. The Master of Engines estimated 13 hours for the servitors to scrub the vents clear, and thus Mar gave the order for the Helicanus and the Cashin to continue onwards. Two vessels on station was better than none. The Lupercal Pursuivant would haul anchor in the shadow of an asteroid and rejoin the flotilla upon the restoration of drive functionality. 11 hours passed before they caught the first hint of another ship on an intercepting parabola. Mars stiffened on the command throne as the Master of AuSpec lifted his fist, a withered, fused claw of a thing.
"Captain Mar,"
he said, in a sopping gestalt of a dozen or more interleaved voices.
"A vessel approaches."
"Designation?"
"By displacement, a rapid strike cruiser. The mines aboard bear the unmistakable touch of Medusa upon them."
Mar didn't question this last morsel of information. More than just machines were searching the void around the Lupercal Pursuivant. Locked in a pitch-black chamber within the vessel's prow, a host of warp-touched astropaths were linked to its sensorium via neural spikes driven into their cuneo-cerebellar tracts. As it had been described to Mar, they felt vibrations in the spaces between real space and the warp. Dark-robed Mechanicum adepts had modified the Lupercal Pursuivant's AuSpec systems during the 3-year hunt for Medusan's fleet, which had given the Sons of Horus a marked advantage against the Iron Hands. A ship could go as dark as it was possible to go, and still the Lupercal Pursuivant's shuttered astropaths could find it if the mines aboard burned brightly enough. And from the look of the phosphor-bright image on the viewscreen, the mines on this new ship burned so very brightly. The master of Auspex had once been a warrior of the Sons of Horus, but now he was something both more and less than transhuman. His altered body reclined on a grav couch, pierced through by scores of bubbling tubes and inload cables. His head was encased in a latticework scaffold, and the lid of his skull was crowned by numerous invasive implants, all of which completely remodeled the synaptic architecture of his brain to better process the visions coming from the astropaths and display them in a usable fashion.
Oh, looks like you were right,
said Cybale, his slate-grey eyes following the glittering track of the incoming starship.
They've been watching us. Who knows for how long?
Ma nodded. It makes sense, he said. We were the last of the Sons of Horus fleets coming into Dwell, and such a muster speaks of a greater deployment to come. I can't imagine that Shadrach Medjuson wouldn't want to know what Lupercal's next move is.
So he left the vessel lying in wait to watch our movements?
Yes, but whoever is in command of that ship is Iron Hands to the core, said Mar. He couldn't resist a foundering vessel in an asteroid belt.
Oh, more fool him.
Who's to say we wouldn't do the same if Lupercal fell? What risks would we take to strike back at those who cut him down? Cybale shrugged, unwilling to concede he might make such an error of judgment. Instead, he changed the subject, gesturing towards the master of Auspex.
Well, as useful as this has proven, it's no end for a warrior of the Legion, said Cybale.
Mar nodded in agreement. It sits ill with me also, Sergeant. But the results speak for themselves. Cybale's vox chirruped, and he placed two fingers to his ear. He nodded at what he was hearing.
Enemy vessel 5,000 kilometers enclosing on our ventral rear quarter, said the master of Auspex.
Coming in behind and below, said Mar. Classic breaching tactics. They mean to cripple us, then board us.
Azadine, as his warriors ready on your word,
said Cybale, unable to mask his own urge to be locked in a gunship assault pattern. Mar grinned. Well, don't worry, Kyson. You'll get your chance to fight, said Mar. You and I both. The perfect kill. Executed flawlessly. The enemy's demise would be welcome in and of itself, but to deliver a death blow with such machine-like precision against the Warmaster's own legion just made this maneuver all the sweeter. The Gorgorex was a rapid-strike cruiser of the Vergan clan, old and hoary even before the treachery of Horus. It had fought its way clear of Istvan with a shell-shocked cadre of survivors, mainly Iron Hands, but with a solid proportion of Salamanders and a handful of Raven Guard. The Vergan were a proud and isolated clan, and thus the crew of the Gorgorex were well suited to the new way of war forced upon them after Istvan. Its commander was an Iron Father of the 10th Legion named Oktar Uldin, and he swung the Gorgorex in below the stricken Lupercal pursuivant, using only the smallest bursts of thrust to manoeuvre. They were operating purely on external visual feeds. The risk of the enemy ship detecting any Auspex sweeps were too great to countenance. Uldin had watched the three vessels surging towards the Azoth Gate and logged them in the ship's database, assaying their speed, armaments, and quirks as they went. Any and all information on enemy vessels was invaluable, for just as warriors had their foibles, strengths, and weaknesses that could be exploited, so too did starships. Legion registries identified the frigate as Lupercal Pursuivant, the destroyers as Helicarnas and Cashin. All were known to the Iron Hands after news of the disastrous engagement at Arasak had trickled down through the necessarily compartmentalized network of attack cells. The Helicarnas, the larger of the two destroyers, was slightly slower adjusting course to port. Its armor looked to have been repaired numerous times on its starboard flank, layered plate over layered plate, making it heavy on the turn. The Cashin had a few seconds latency on its maneuvering igniters, a weakness that a foe with greater agility could turn to its advantage. And, it now transpired, the Lupercal Pursuivant had issues with its vent cowlings. Its reactors were burning hot, far beyond any recommended tolerances. If those vents weren't cleared soon, the ship would blow itself to pieces without any help from the Gorgorex. At full magnification, the servitor crews struggling to clear the vents were like swarms of ants moving around the armored haunches of a plains-dwelling leviathan. Under normal circumstances, Uldin would not have engaged. His orders, passed down through secretive relays and encoded with the highest priorities, were to watch and wait, to observe and report. That wasn't the Vergan way, especially when intercepted Vox traffic between the enemy ships appeared to confirm that the Lupercalpa Suivant was the flagship of a 16th Legion captain named Tybalt Mar. That this was undoubtedly the same Tybalt Mar whose head Shadrach Medjuson had sworn to take made the danger of exposure worth any risk. The dorsal launch tubes were loaded and ready. They would kill the crew of this vessel, render it dark, and then ram it out of the dwell system with a single high-intensity burst of acceleration. The ship would never be seen again, its disappearance a celestial mystery that would never be explained.
"On my mark, light them up," said Uldin. "They're making ready to launch," said Cybale.
"Counterspread on my command."
"Oh, it's a risk letting them fire first."
Mar shook his head. "No, it was the only way to get them in close enough," he said. "Once we stir the void with enough blood, the sharks will come to feed. And you know the first rule of void war?" Cybale grinned and said,
"Be the shark."
The first wave of boarding torpedoes raced from the Gorgorex at almost the same instant as a spread of countermeasures launched from the ventral guns of the Lupercalpa Suivant. With a much lighter payload, the Sons of Horus missiles closed the distance between the two ships in the time it took the boarding forces to travel 100 kilometers. Little more than 200-meter-long tubes filled with shrapnel, the countermeasures exploded and formed supersonic clouds of tumbling debris. The torpedoes had no chance to evade, their guidance systems locked until their terminal maneuvers, and fully half were ripped open or sent tumbling off into deep space. Battery fire engaged the rest, and yet more were blasted to ruin before they got to within 50 kilometers of the Lupercalpa Suivant. Point defense guns killed the rest as they executed their terminal dive. Only one torpedo survived to penetrate the frigate's hull. Avakol Hur, one of the 18th Company's most feared breach leaders, was waiting for it with his blood-spattered warriors. Not a single enemy warrior set foot on the Lupercalpa Suivant. Realizing he had been lured into the attack, Oktar Uldin broke off immediately. The Gorgorex's engines fired, but having drifted for so long, it took time to coax them to full power. Time that the Lupercalpa Suivant did not need, having kept its engines hot to maintain the illusion of reactor cores on the verge of overload. Mar swung the frigate around and let the multiple batteries on its prow and portside flank have free rein as it rapidly closed the distance to its prey. The hunted now became the hunter, as slashing arcs of high-yield lasers raked the Gorgorex's length. Its voids were yet to ignite, and detonations marched across the dorsal armor, melting armored plates to molten slag and explosively venting hull compartments to the void. Serfs and menials spiraled out, shock-freezing in an instant. The Gorgorex shuddered in pain, but it was a vessel of the Iron Hands, proud and defiant. The voids finally lit as it took its wounding stoically, like a pugilist who knows he cannot win the fight, but will stay on his feet until the last bell. Its engines flared, ready to push it from this one-sided engagement. Its rear quarters exploded as a flurry of torpedoes launched in its rear arc, slammed home and detonated within the drive cowlings. Swinging out from behind the moon-sized asteroids that had covered their swift turns, Helicanus and Cashin effectively crushed any hope of the Gorgorex's escape. Its engines vanished in an expanding plasma corona, and oxygen bled into the void like glittering silver blood trails. The two destroyers maneuvered into close range. Their guns flayed its voids, collapsing entire quadrants of protection in moments before targeting its point defenses. They pulled away with perfect synchrony as a shadow fell across the Gorgorex. Angular and deadly, an assassin's blade over the face of the sun. Lupercalpa Suivant hove to, so close that the space between it and the Gorgorex danced with borealis light as the remaining void envelopes overlapped. Generator vanes blew out in flaring surges of feedback. Space burned blue and purple and crimson. A frigate of Lupercalpa Suivant's displacement normally had no capacity to launch strikecraft, but its loading bays opened, and three stormbirds that had spent the voyage from Dwell chained to the deck now fell into space. They rammed their engines to maximum thrust and powered towards their stricken prey. Helpless, the crew of the Gorgorex could only watch and await the inevitable assault. Hull penetration came 2 minutes later.